Welcome, 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 everyone, to almost episode 100, not quite yet, of the Student Loan Planner podcast. If you have not listened to the first 98, 97 episodes, I definitely recommend binge doing that so that you can get ready for episode 100. But if you're not into that, at least keep tuning in today as me and Megan, me being Lauren Williams, tell you some scary stories, because in the month of October, Halloween is approaching. And, you know, what else could we better share about than some scary student loan stories? But first, Megan's going to jump in and share with us some of the updates, bring us up to speed with what's happened so far this year, and then also, you know, what we can expect, because there's a lot of change on the horizon. The election is just around the corner. Can you jump in and tell us how things are progressing?
Yes, definitely. Fall and like Halloween especially is my favorite holiday. I love everything spooky. I love all the like Halloween movies that come on. So I'm looking forward to this.
Are you dressing up?
I don't know. I guess Halloween is kind of canceled in a way, but I think I might dress up. My family gets together and does like a little, we're going to do like, I think a basement trick-or-treating thing with my younger family members. It's funny because my name's Megan, of course. My boyfriend's name is Kelly. And so we were thinking about somehow trying to tie that into Megyn Kelly, the reporter.
Oh.
And my sister, her name's Erin, and her boyfriend's name is Andrew. And so that's Erin Andrews. So we were trying to figure out, like, how the heck can we dress up to, like, signify that? But I don't know. That was our idea. If anybody has a better idea, let me know.
Right. Do keep us posted.
So let's walk through just to catch up to where we are now. Of course, there have been a lot of changes that have been kind of spooky for people this past year. Most is in regards to federal student loans. There has been very minimal updates or relief for private loans. There have been some disaster relief forbearance opportunities with certain lenders. But generally speaking, a lot of the stuff that's been in the news and talked about in Congress has been for federal. So how did we get here? Well, COVID-19 came to the states beginning of the year, and by March 13th, President Trump declared that he wanted to waive interest on all student loans held by government agencies. And so he then further clarified that maybe a week later, saying that student loan interest and payments for federal student loans would be paused for 60 days without penalty. And so that was good, because at the time, like, places were shutting down, people weren't able to make payments. The interest itself, you know, we were having these conversations at that time, like, okay, interest being waived is cool, but, you know, it doesn't help with people who are losing their jobs and who can't make payments.
Right.
So then he brought that in. And then come March 27th, that's when the $2 trillion with a T stimulus plan was introduced, the CARES Act, which we have talked about a lot. But that provided a lot of relief to borrowers, where it paused payments, froze interest at 0% until originally it was September 30th, which is just, you know, a week or two ago now. But then, so continuing on through the year, if you weren't nauseous with those changes already,
right?
We also saw an update that the Department of Ed was planning on signing new contracts with 5 new companies for new servicers. So that caused some panic, because, you know, there's already so much unknown. We didn't know if relief was going to be extended past September 30th at that time. And then they're talking about payments kicking back in and servicers changing all at the same time. I was thinking it
scared the bejesus out of a lot of our clients. Yeah. We got a lot of emails during that time.
I was getting nervous about it. My goodness. I just thought that that would have been a mess. But they came out, the chief operating officer of FSA, or Federal Student Aid, came out and said, hey, chill, you know, we're still going to do this, but we're not making changes, or we're not moving anybody's loans until December of 2021. So that was good. I don't think it would have been a good idea to try to make all those big changes at the end of this year. And especially because we have seen some extended relief. So President Trump came in August 8th and ordered that payments and interest be suspended past September 30th until December 31st for 2020. And there was at first some confusion on if it was a true extension of the CARES Act to where payments towards, you know, or the months paused would count towards forgiveness, or, you know, interest would be frozen. And they further clarified that and said, yes, it's essentially an extension of the CARES Act. And so that is where we're at now, as far as what has been implemented. Payments and interest are still frozen until December 31st. If you're pursuing forgiveness, these months count towards forgiveness, which is lovely. So Congress has been going back and forth on another stimulus package. And in that stimulus package, it did include language for student loan relief. We talked about this a little bit in our email last week. It was the HEROES 2.0. There was some excitement because we thought they were going to be coming to maybe some compromise. And maybe I'm too optimistic, but they continued to go back and forth all last week. They didn't end up coming together with a compromise. But, you know, some of the language in there would have extended payments to, you know, September of 2021, potentially. And there was some other nuggets in there that we won't get to just because I don't want to get people's hopes up if that's not something that's going to come back around. But you this week put together, or on the 8th, our email just went out where you had an update on kind of where we're at now with stimulus package talk. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we are going nowhere fast. So earlier this week, President Trump said that he is not going to continue to negotiate, and he's putting things on hold to focus on the election, the upcoming election, which, you know, makes a lot of sense. There's a lot to kind of be juggling at this time. And we do know that you are not having to pay until December 31st. So, I mean, it might be a little bit of a rush post-election. You know, we're expecting kind of a contentious finishing, and we're not sure exactly how things are going to play out as it pertains to the election, but we know we at least have till December 31st. And so there should be time post-election, which is at the beginning of November and between the December 31st, for them to make some decisions, at least regarding student loan payments, if not the full stimulus package, which would be a really important thing. So, you know, there's the option to, you know, either further kind of quote unquote extend the CARES package if HEROES is not yet ready to go. But we will be needing some sort of answer about what's going to happen as of 12/31 prior to. So we just got to sit tight and, you know, we're staying abreast of everything at Student Loan Planner. The tide can change at any moment. So we've got to stay aware of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. It stinks that we have to have a little more patience. I do think in general, we are going to see some things come through over the next couple months that will answer some of these questions on if there's an extended or an extension to relief, or if maybe there are some changes to the system in general. That could be interesting to learn about too, depending on who's sitting in the presidency seat and what happens over these next couple months. So patience is always tough, but I think we'll learn a lot more here soon, and we'll continue to report on things as we know them to be true, or as we know them to be something of relevance. Now, one big question that we have consistently gotten that I think we've gotten some clarity on since maybe the beginning of this extension was about when you're on an income-driven plan, you have to recertify income every 12 months or update your payment. And so there was a lot of questions on, like, should I be updating my income right now? Do I need to? So the short answer for that is no. Everybody who had to update their income between March and December 31st, which is probably almost everybody, does not have to recertify prior to December 31st. As part of the administrative forbearance, the recertification date has been pushed out from the original date. So according to studentaid.gov, they've continuously been updating information on the changes going on right now. They've since updated the income-driven recertification question. They've answered that question as, you know, if you've had a recertification date due between March and December, you do not have to recertify before December 31st, regardless of whether you had to or not.
Are you able to? Have you seen clients actually be able to, been successful with doing it as planned?
So you can, and that's something that might be a little strategic for folks to do, because one of the other questions that was updated, so this is exactly how it reads on studentaid.gov, but it says, I'm currently on an income-driven repayment plan. I'm unemployed because of the coronavirus outbreak and don't know when my income will return to the same level. What can I do? And it talks about how, of course, we're all on forbearance anyways. You know, no payment is due until December 31st. But if you're on an, then it goes on to say, if you're on an IDR plan and your income has changed significantly, you can update your information to get a new payment amount based off of your current income. So again, if you have no income, no taxable income at all, that can generate a $0 payment for you and you can get that locked in. Mm-hmm. So it then goes on to tell you how to go about applying or updating your payment. And it says, after the administrative forbearance ends on December 31st, your monthly payments will resume at the new amount. And so if you updated your income now, because maybe you wanted to hold on to 2019's tax return, that income, because it was lower than what 2020 is going to be, go ahead and recertify now, because that payment's going to resume as is coming up in December, or post-December is what it sounds like. And then, of course, if you have no income right now, you can update your income now, even though you're not required to. And then come January, if payments kick back in, your payment would be zero. I think the big question is just how long is that going to be for? You know, are they pushing your actual recertification date out 6 months or 3 months or you know, whatever it is? We don't know that yet and it's not clarified yet, but it could be maybe strategic to recertify now if you wanted to lock in a lower income year.
Right. Yeah, we know so much of student loans is all about strategy. You know, I think that makes an actual perfect segue into our other topic today, which is scary stories. So
yes.
I took the liberty of doing some Googling and found some absolutely terrifying student loan stories. And we want to share them with you as the audience, but share them with you in the vein of, while they start out pretty scary and they could, you know, they have the potential to give you nightmares forever and ever, the thing I learned as I walked through these things is, like, yes, these were really awful things that have happened to each of these people, but with a plan and real good information, these things would not have been quite as scary. And, you know, they could have turned into, I got a really cool plan for my student loan. So we're going to just walk through some student loan stories here and give you two or three horror stories, if you will, and then tell you why they're not so horrible or what could be done to make them a little bit less horrible.
Yep. We'll shine that flashlight on what we think is scary and talk about why it's not so scary.
Exactly. So let's start with our first one. I'm going to go ahead and, like, read it exactly as is. Maybe I'll start skipping over some stuff if, you know, it's not really relevant. But the first one is from someone named Aaron. It says, good news. Next week, I will be referred to as doctor and I'm doing my project and I'm finally done with school. The bad news is I have $280,000 of student loan and it's really impacting my life. My current credit score has improved since moving. My landlord gave me an affordable place to live. It's below market value. Despite my improved credit though, and my mother offering to co-sign on a mortgage, the financial company would not allow me to get a mortgage, even though I'm up to date on my student loan. So this was like buzzword number one for me. I was like, something's not quite right here. So the mortgage broker's advice was to pay $200,000 toward the student loans to get a mortgage on the house. So basically, in other words, yeah, this is terrifying. This is absolutely awful. And so to get a mortgage on the house. So in other words, I had to basically buy a house and pay cash out of pocket for my student loans. So to deal with the situation, her mom is going to purchase the home and they're going to put in a trust so that she can inherit the home instead, which sounds super complicated. And then she said hospitals like hers don't pay great salaries. So she's going to drive 2 hours each way to be able to do some additional side hustle work. She said, currently my student loan situation is a mess. I pay $400 per month in payments and I've only paid $1,000 in principal toward the loan, but it keeps building interest. Next year now, Erin plans on starting to make $800 per month payments. So she's going to be making a total of $1,200 a month toward her student loans. But she's saying, I feel like I will never be able to pay the debt off. So Megan, let's just start breaking down all the things that are horrific, but also fixable about Aaron's situation.
Yes. So I would say, number one, get another mortgage broker.
For sure.
I don't know if this person is so, and this is what's interesting about, you know, buying a home with significant student loan debt. Most mortgage lenders now are not going to be paying attention to your balance for your student loans. They care more about what your required monthly payment is. She's talking about how her payment is $400 a month on a debt that she owes, you know, $280,000 on. So this tells me that she's on some kind of income-driven plan. So they're federal loans. So what that mortgage broker should have been doing is taking into account that required monthly payment, factoring that into what's called her back-end debt-to-income ratio, which is simply where they take that hypothetical mortgage plus any other debt obligation monthly payments. They add those together, and that needs to be below, I think an ideal threshold is below 38%, but maximum 42% of your gross income per month. And so I don't think there needed to be any of this, you know, throw all of your money towards the student loans, put this house in a trust, you know, you have to get all crafty with having someone else buy it. You know, I don't think it needed to go that far. I think she just needed to find another mortgage broker.
Yeah. And it's an important point to bring up. Your mortgage broker is not a certified financial planner.
No.
They specialize in mortgages. And that was not good advice to say, well, just go pay the loans off and then come back, basically, was kind of the gist of what they were saying. And I think the other thing, too, is like you said, a $400 a month payment. And she's like, well, I'm going to start doing $1,200. And that's what we hear so frequently when people reach out to us, like, I want to do a little extra. But the little extra is not enough extra to actually make a meaningful difference. And so I did the math on the $1,200 a month. That's still going to have her paying on these loans for the next 40 years. So
Wow. She's
going to need to be able to pay significantly more in order to be able to pay these loans off in full. And we know that, you know, standard term for student loans is usually around 10 years. Some people stretch it out to 20. The other thing that's probably relevant is, you know, she's just becoming a physician. So maybe this $400 a month payment is based on her residency or fellowship salary. And, you know, she's going to expect to probably big increase on a income-driven plan when she hits that attending salary. She said it wasn't a great salary coming up, but I'd imagine that it's going to increase her payment well beyond that $400 a month she's making as a physician, or paying right now as a physician.
Yeah. And with her too, I mean, we always talk about how you can leverage the federal system in your favor by taking advantage of income-driven plans and pursuing forgiveness. So the thought process is, we're not paying off this debt. We're going to go towards that forgiveness threshold. You know, if her hospital was maybe in public service, great. We can maybe pursue that. If not, based on what it sounds like her debt to income ratio, or her income to balance ratio is, based off of these like estimated payments, she's a good candidate for pursuing that longer term forgiveness even. That's going to help her so much by alleviating some of the stress, knowing that she's not going to have to pay this all off. That $1,200 a month that she's thinking about paying, she's not going to be spinning her wheels paying that and trying to pay it off in that way. We're essentially treating it like a tax, paying as little as possible to reduce or to maximize how much we get forgiven on that back end. And then maybe she has to save a little bit for the tax implication, but all the things that she's stressed out about right now, buying a house and being able to live with these loans, all of those things are achievable if she just had the right plan. She wasn't walking through, I think, her options and talking through the best plan for her.
Yeah, and it's so hard because you don't know who bumps into who. And like you said, so far she's bumped into someone who's given her poor advice, but that's why it's important to seek out someone that is a professional, that even if they don't know, we get, you know, referrals all the time from financial advisors that aren't experts at student loans, but they know enough to know where to help you get the information that you need. And so I hope that Erin somehow bumps into this podcast and we get to help her, but this is
Erin,
definitely
call us.
Enough to keep you up at night. Right. Erin, please call us.
Yep.
All right. We are moving on to scary story number two. This gentleman's name is Rick. He says, I have an outstanding balance of $350,000 and there's really no hope for me outside of bankruptcy. So Megan and I are already lifting our eyebrows because we know his student loans aren't forgiven in bankruptcy. So it's like already sitting off an alarm bell. I graduated with a Bachelor of Science and I had a veteran loan. By the time I got out of law school, I couldn't do the VA scholarship. So I had to go with student loans. So this happens a lot. Sometimes people go and they decide to like take a break from school and then they decide to go back. At the time, I was working full-time and went to law school at night. So I finished law school, had $60,000 of debt. However, the higher-paying legal jobs weren't there. They went to those who graduated in the top 5 to 10% of their class. So this is something else I think that we take for granted, is that everyone who has a law degree or some other higher educational degree is going to make the big bucks and everything is going to go great. There is, you know, like you said, a class of people in every single school, and some people are at the top of their class and some are at the bottom. And even being at the bottom doesn't mean that you're not going to ever make a good salary, but there are some differences in the types of work that people go into and the amount they make. You just hear lawyer and some people think, oh, they're rich, or doctor, and you think they're rich, but there's all kinds of different ways that people earn money based on what they want to do. All right, so back to Rick. He says, things started to get bleak right after graduation. He was laid off from the job that got him through grad school. Oh, through law school. There we go. he didn't have decent income from over a year. He applied for forbearance and deferments and wasn't really making any headway. In fact, he was losing financial ground and his loans eventually went into default. At the same time, he experienced a divorce and some alimony payments. That caused a ripple effect, and he was unable to pay the alimony, the child support, and his law license was taken away as a result. So often, you know, things start to compile and they, you know, the ball gets rolling and it just rolls out of control. So he filed for Chapter 13 bankruptcy to get a reset and start all over again, but his loans continued to grow. So generally, student loans are not discharged in bankruptcy. So now he's up to $90,000 in 2005, and that was 12 years after he graduated from college. So now he says, eventually he got on an income-based repayment plan and the loans just continued to grow. And now his amount is now $350,000. After 26 years of graduating, he is now 62 years old, and he is trying to find his way to, you know, just keep these loans going, stay out of default, and really protect his Social Security payment. So this is a terrifying story, Megan.
Yes, but there is a lot of things I want to touch on here.
Yes, there are so many lights at the end of this tunnel. He will come out of this haunted house if he gets a plan.
Yes, exactly. So one thing I do want to touch on, and we've talked about it a little bit before, but bankruptcy. Student loans, it's not impossible to discharge student loans in bankruptcy. It's difficult, but it's not impossible. It's even more difficult with federal student loans because you have access to income-driven plans. Because when you go and you sit in front of a judge in bankruptcy court, you have to prove that you have undue hardship, which means there's no way that you can financially support yourself and your family at a basic, you know, just financial needs analysis and support your student loan payments at the same time. If you're able to prove that, then student loans could be discharged. But since federal loans have, you know, everyone with federal loans has access to an income-driven plan, that's hard to prove because your payment can be as low as $0 a month. And so if that's the case, in this scenario, he was going through periods of unemployment, low income. An income-driven plan from the beginning could have brought a lot of relief to him feeling like he needed to make larger payments. And those lower payments, you know, again, there is an end in sight with those too, because each income-driven plan has forgiveness associated with it with their maximum repayment periods.
No, I think you bring up a really good point about deferment and forbearance. So frequently I hear people are just, you know, sticking their head in the ground and ignoring the loans, or that they feel like they just don't make enough money to pay on them. And they're like, I can't swing it right now, so I'm going to just put it in forbearance or deferment. If you truly cannot swing it based on your income, your payment can be zero on an income-driven repayment plan. And so it's important to take advantage of that. So that was one thing that this gentleman, Rick, missed out on initially. You know, it sounds like he could be one of the early people that's going to get forgiveness. So he said he's older, 62 years old. He said he finally found the income driven. So we know that if he found IBR, it was probably, it could have been as early as 2009. And so forgiveness could be around the corner in 2034. The other thing I would say is, you know, not saying that 2034 is right around the corner, but it is that he's one of the earlier adopters. And so this loan balance is, like you said, well out of reach if he is on a Social Security fixed income. But like you said, also, I would tell him to get on an income-driven plan now. Now, we got to get a little gruesome here. It is Halloween. This is a scary story. And I don't mean to be morbid, but if Rick was to pass away with these federal student loans, these loans would pass away with him. So, you know, he's 62. I'm not sure what kind of health he's in, but if he doesn't make it until 2034, then these loans, you know, will pass away with him and there will be no tax liability due.
Yeah. And the last thing, which I think is the saving grace potentially for this whole situation right now, his last sentence says, as a disabled veteran, I just hope my Social Security isn't stolen from me. I'm a disabled veteran is what he says. If he's a disabled veteran, if you're permanently disabled with the Social Security's definition or a certification from the VA or a certification from your physician, this is another opportunity for loans to be 100% discharged with no tax implication.
Yes. Please, Rick, we need you to Google disability discharge. Yes. You don't have to live like this.
Yes, you can submit an application and one of those three ways to certify it. You know, they'll process that. They'll put your loans into, you know, a payment pause while they process it. And then if you are truly disabled by those definitions, by one of those entities' definitions, then, you know, you can say goodbye to your loan situation altogether. That $350 is gone. So that was the last thing I wanted to touch on because I was like, that's the key to this whole, like, you know, yeah, to get out of this haunted house.
Exactly. To wake up from this nightmare and live the rest of your life without the stress that, yeah, you feel like there's no way out right now.
Yeah.
So if anybody knows Rick, tell them to give us a call. We can help him.
Right.
Or just share this podcast with him. All right. So the next one we've got is Debbie. Debbie says, I returned to college in 1996 to fulfill my dream of becoming a public school teacher. At the time, Oklahoma offered financial assistance, but the program ended as I was halfway through my studies. My husband and I decided we would keep going anyway, and I would get my 4-year-plus degree. We decided to take out student loans to finish the degree and then planned on repaying the debt within 10 years of graduation. Even with two small children at home, we lived modestly and we knew that we would be able to repay the debt. So they're optimistic. This is not too much for us to handle. Having previously worked in the mortgage industry, she had ample information regarding lending and each year asked her financial aid officer about what her loan payment would be. She was told $50 per loan. So first red flag here. Mm-hmm. How is a student loan officer calculating when the loans are in deferment and, you know, they're gaining interest? Yeah, that's just, I'm not so sure.
I wonder if they meant at least $50. Because if you go on the standard 10-year plan, your payment has to be at least $50, no matter what your balance is. If it's lower enough to, if it's low enough to where if it spread the payment out over 10 years and it calculated a payment lower than 50, the payment has to be 50. So I wonder if that's what they meant, but let's continue on. Red flag.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah. Maybe they just didn't say it right or wasn't heard right, but okay. So she assumed that the total amount of payment would be 200. So that means she had, you know, roughly four loans. She got to graduation and discovered that the payment was going to be 400. So after receiving her teaching certificate, she went to work and she started with a salary of $25,000 per year. That's when the nightmare began. Right after graduation, she had $35,000 in debt. So interest probably capitalized and the full loan balance kicked in. And we know $30,000 is around what it costs to do an undergraduate degree. Mm-hmm. She was told by loan administrators that she had no options for lower payments and that she could not make partial payments. This is not good. This is the nightmare for sure. By 2004, Sally Mae told her that in no uncertain terms, she needed to start paying off her loan. They agreed to a consolidation through the Federal Family Education Loan Program. Mm-hmm. Another red flag here, Megan.
Mm-hmm.
By that point, the loan has grown to $52,000 and she's getting worried. But in 2007, public service loan forgiveness popped on the scene and sprung into action. She heard about this program and was told that she wouldn't qualify for public service loan forgiveness until she got 120 payments on her loan. Well, that part is true, but there's a big yep. part that we just talked about in the last paragraph that we know is a warning sign. And that we've seen so many stories just like this one. Because I was on an income-based loan relief plan, I began filling out paperwork as instructing on an annual basis. So she's recertifying her income annually. She's on an income-driven repayment plan, but she has FFEL loans. So she was told, she gets 10 years down the road and they say, you are not getting any forgiveness. She's like, wait, what? How is this a thing? I don't understand. What it was is that she did not have direct loans. And, you know, now she's been making payments for the last 10 years. She said that the payments calculated are roughly $36,000 that she spent paying on these loans. Now she's feeling really boxed in. And so she's tried to get legal advice. She wants to sue. She is still continuing to teach in a public school system. It's now 19 years down the road. And she just feels like she's never going to be done with these loans. Megan, save her. Save her. Get her out of this haunted house.
Oh, man. This warrants some background, too, because the student loan system, as we talked about at the beginning of this episode, can change, or things can change to affect programs. And so prior to 2010, you could have been issued an FFEL loan, which I think COVID-19 kind of exposed FFEL loans a little bit more because they could be held either commercially or federally. But regardless, for public service loan forgiveness, FFEL loans do not qualify for the forgiven balance. They just don't. It's part of the program that was enacted in 2007. So she had it half right. She jumped on an income-driven plan, and the one income-driven plan that FFEL loans qualify for is income-based repayment. So we were half right there. We had the right repayment plan, but the wrong loan type. Mm-hmm. So continuing on, you know, she did run into a nightmare to where those payments were not counting towards public service loan forgiveness, unfortunately.
The toughest thing is now she's got to decide that, does she want to start all over and try to do 10 more years? So if mm-hmm. she got the right information the first time around, someone would have told her to consolidate those FFEL loans into direct loans, and she could have been among the first in 2017. So we often get questions from our clients or other readers that are saying, why are the numbers so low? It's because of stories just similar to Debbie's, where they didn't have the right information. So 2017 rolled around and they didn't get forgiveness. So mm-hmm. someone should have told her when they said no to forgiveness in 2017, hey, you need to fix this information and continue on. So now she could have, you know, consolidated the loans, be under, have direct loans, and be scheduled for forgiveness as of 2027, especially if she's not planning on leaving the public school system, which it sounds like she's a few years from retirement.
Yeah.
But now she's been paying for so long at this point, it's like she's getting close to taxable forgiveness as well. And so she's kind of got to weigh her options. Like, do I want to start over? And she needs to do the math on 10 years at public service loan forgiveness, or maybe I'm, you know, she might be like 10 or 15 years into taxable forgiveness.
Yeah. And so that is a scenario where you do want to weigh the pros and cons, because just like you said, if she consolidated now, we'd have to restart the clock towards PSLF. However, she might, you know, depending on her marital status, you know, she might have access to a lower income driven plan, which makes the payment lower than what she's used to.
But I'd imagine that her salary's gone up too, you know, over the last 10 mm-hmm. years. So, you know, she had some probably really low payments in the first 10 years when she started out at $25,000. She's 19 mm-hmm. years into teaching. We know teachers are not compensated fairly as they should be, but we definitely have to imagine that over 19 years, her income has grown significantly.
Yeah. You know, that could be an option. And what you can do to figure out how long you've been in an income-driven plan is you can ask for the income-based repayment payment history, or whatever plan you're on. So revised pay-as-you-earn payment history, or pay-as-you-earn payment history. And I've seen these reports. They'll send them to you where it shows you when you entered the plan, and it'll show you all of the payments you've made since entering the plan and status. So if you went into forbearance, of course, that time doesn't count towards forgiveness thresholds. But it can help you get a good idea of where you stand if you're 10 years in, 15 years in. And for her, if she's, you know, if it makes more sense to pursue the longer term forgiveness because of the time she's maybe built up into IBR already, you know, that could be an option. She will have to potentially save for the tax implication, but, you know, I think our general consensus is it might not even be there. So that could be even better than PSLF if there's a forgiven balance, no tax implication, and sooner than it would have been for her starting over and doing PSLF 10 years from now. So that is something where she'd have to weigh kind of both options and her risk tolerance between maybe both options. Like if she stopped working, you know, 5 years from now and couldn't continue on with PSLF, then maybe the latter option would have been better because consolidation starts over your clock. So I don't know. There's a lot of thoughts I have here. I feel like, you know, unfortunately the Fed system is complicated to navigate sometimes. And if you didn't get it right from the beginning, or if you didn't, you know, do the due diligence on the front end of your repayment journey, unfortunately, that could lead to some unfortunate circumstances such as this, to where we're having to fix problems 19 years later that we could have maybe caught earlier on if we did a little more due diligence on our loan situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my thoughts on it. What are your ending thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is a really creepy situation to be in. It's really hard when you can't figure out, like I said, what's the best path. And I think the hardest thing about reading this story is you run into people all the time that are very angry, very resentful. You know, they're very argumentative, and you know, they're just frustrated because they've had years and years of not being treated right, not getting the right information. And so, you know, while we can share the good information with Jennifer, you know, she's pretty bitter about it. And I would be too.
Oh, yeah.
It's not fair. It's not fair that, you know, you waste tons of money and that you don't have the right information and that your financial future could have looked completely different had you had that information. And so, you know, getting over that bitterness is going to be like kind of a step number one to being able to tackle this, get a plan and move forward. And we see so many people that aren't ready to really let go of, like, I want to sue and I'm, you know, I got to get a lawyer and I'm not going to pay the interest because this loan is double. I only borrowed this amount. And unfortunately, that's not the way it works. And there are plans that, you know, like we can say, okay, well, from this day forward, this is the best option for you. But you got to be able to let go of the past and make the best plan for the future.
Mm-hmm. I've actually had a couple cases recently that were similar to this. I had one where there was some bitterness, and I had one where they were so happy because they thought they were just going to have to pay this off for the rest of their life. And so knowing your options is really important. And yes, knowing how to proceed from here is really important. And, you know, it may not be, you know, we're not able to wave magic wands. We can't make things disappear or change things that have happened in the past, but we can get a plan together that's going to make sense going forward so you don't have this over your head forever. And so, yeah, this one was a tough one for sure. I feel like there was a lot of opportunity to where I wish that, like, we had just crossed paths, you know, in 2007, even, and, you know, 2017, I wish we were there. But unfortunately, that, you know, we can't look back that way. We can only move forward.
Yeah, I feel like we've done enough of terrifying people today. These are definitely some scary stories, but hopefully we showed you that while you may feel like you're in a terrifying situation, that your student loan plan does not have to be creepy crawly and make you have nightmares forever and ever on end. The thing you can do to change your situation is first change your mindset. Say that you're excited to get a clear plan in place, that you want to look forward towards your future, and then to seek out expert help in order to get that plan. It's October. We're in a creepy, crawly, scary time, but we know that ghosts and goblins are not real and that they can be conquered, whether you want to put a magic potion on them or if you want to put education on your student loans to get rid of the goblin that is the student loan plan. You know, we can help you get that taken care of over here at Student Loan Planner. So don't hesitate to reach out to us. Our fearless leader, Travis, is on paternity leave for a couple more weeks. So I hope you enjoyed listening to me and Megan. You've got the boys, Justin and Rob, coming up soon. And then all four of us are going to be doing episode 100. So, of course, if you've got questions, comments, or concerns, please do not hesitate to reach out. We are happy to help you. Megan, you want to say anything to close out?
Well, I'll say this was definitely an adventure to walk through these scary stories together. I think we did a great job of dissecting just the scariness, the initial scariness, because that's all it is. You know, even when you're talking about scary movies or haunted things or ghosts, you know, it's something that you think is scary and might harm you, but really the reality is it's not that scary. You know, there's a plan, there's something that we can do to navigate it. And so that's how we're tying it in here. But I'm glad the girls were able to get together for a podcast episode. This was fun.
This was so fun. Don't be petrified by your student loan situation. Like we said, we don't have a magic potion, but we've definitely got possibilities for you. Reach out to studentloanplanner.com and we're happy to help.